Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Arnold Flank, and together with Carla Buterman, we are here on behalf of the appellant, Daniel Benefield. Your Honors, when you strip through all of the verbiage and all of the discussions in this case, and you look at the precedent, you are left with the conclusion that there are four facts that are driving this case, at least two of which, perhaps three, are undisputed. First of all, the subpoena issued to One Stop China LTD period was issued to an entity that did not exist and was not separate and distinct and apart from Daniel Benefield. Second of all, Daniel Benefield was not served with any of the documents that appeared before the district judge in May and June of 2009, and as a result, he did not receive notice that an entity that did not exist and himself were going to be cited for contempt. Third of all, Daniel Benefield is a resident of Shanghai, China, and not of Lombard, Illinois. And fourth, Your Honor, counsel for the York Group has not in any way acknowledged the first three facts. Your Honor, it is elementary that a subpoena that is issued for a non-existent entity does not confer jurisdiction.
Before we get too far into this, I have a question about appellate jurisdiction. Your client ignored the subpoena. The district court found as a fact that your client had been served. And then finally, when your client was held in contempt, sanctions orders were entered, your client filed a Rule 60B motion. That was denied. After that was denied, your client did not appeal within 30 days, but instead filed a Rule 59 motion. And when that was denied, an appeal was finally filed. The question I have, and the appeal when it was filed more than 30 days after the denial of the Rule 60B motion. And we have quite a number of cases saying that successive post-decision motions don't extend the time for appeal. And one might think as a result of that that the Rule 59 motion had no effect. And therefore, unless there was an appeal within 30 days of the Rule 60 motion, there's nothing for us to decide. Now, is there any response to that?
Your Honor, it's my understanding that a Rule 59 motion encompasses the language in the Rule 60 motion and defers the time for...
That's part of the problem, right? That's why it's correct to say this was a successive post-judgment motion.
Your Honor,
There was a judgment here, and there have now been two post-judgment motions, right? What our cases, like Daly against Charles, say is that a successive post-judgment motion is just ignored, which means that there needed to be a notice of appeal within 30 days of the district court's denial of the Rule 60B motion. But there wasn't one, right? That's the problem. And is there any way around that problem?
My understanding, Your Honor, and I'll say it again, is that a Rule 59 motion seeking a reconsideration based upon whatever reasons are alleged in the Rule 59 motion extends the time for filing.
Counsel, I think you're missing the point. A Rule 59 motion has to be filed within 14 days of the judgment. It can't be filed within 14 days of the denial of another post-judgment motion. Right? That's the problem that I'm asking you to address. The Rule 59 motion was not filed within 14 days of the judgment. It was filed after the disposition of another post-judgment motion. That's the problem. That's what you need to address.
Your Honor, if there is no jurisdiction, then any judgment rendered by the district court is a nullity and is void ab initio.
No.
I can raise jurisdictional issues.
No appellate jurisdiction. All that's going to happen is your notice of appeal will be dismissed as outside our jurisdiction. It doesn't affect the district court's judgment. The fact that you failed to file a timely notice of appeal has nothing to do with the district court's jurisdiction. Do you have anything to say about this successive post-judgment motion problem. That's the problem I'm asking you to focus on.
Your Honor has indicated that he believes that a judgment was entered. And my response to that is, how can there be a judgment when there is no jurisdiction?
It's really easy.
Well, if it is, Your Honor, it's beyond me. I cannot understand how a judge can enter a judgment when there is no jurisdiction. And I cannot understand
the fundamental difference between subject matter jurisdiction in the district court and personal jurisdiction over a defendant. Questions of personal jurisdiction are waivable. Questions of subject matter jurisdiction are not. But antecedent to either subject matter jurisdiction or personal jurisdiction is appellate jurisdiction. I'm trying to get you to focus on appellate jurisdiction.
Your Honor, I am attempting to appeal what was alleged to have been a judgment. If there was no judgment...
Well, aren't you trying to appeal the denial of a Rule 60B motion?
I am appealing the denial of a Rule 60B motion, which, in effect, is the denial of a Rule 59 motion.
Well, that's too complicated for me.
Right. You're attempting to appeal the denial of the Rule 60B motion, but your notice of appeal was not filed within 30 days of the order denying a Rule 60B motion. That's the jurisdictional problem for appellate jurisdiction. It was filed only within 30 days of the order denying the second successive post-judgment motion, the Rule 59 motion.
I am trying to focus on my understanding of the...
Look, counsel, this is not a novel issue. This is raised in the jurisdictional statement of your adversary. They cite our decisions in Charles and Daly and Van Weyenberg for the proposition that you can't file successive post-judgment motions. This can't be coming as a novel issue to you.
No, Your Honor. But I would suggest to this Court that their citations are inappropriate.
I noticed, by the way, that Charles against Daly and SEC against Van Weyenberg and the other decisions that they rely on don't make it into your reply brief.
I would suggest to this Court that if there was a time frame that appellant needed to comply with, appellant needed notice of what was going on, and the fact that the judgment being appealed from was not binding in the view of the appellant and his counsel because of lack of jurisdiction or lack of service, which we tried to bring to the attention of the district court, gives rise to the grounds for this appellate court to have jurisdiction
over
the appeal.
Why didn't you appeal from the August 12th order award of attorney's fees?
Because, Your Honor, my client never had notice of it. The first time that my client had notice of anything that was going on in the proceedings before the district court...
Well, it says your Benefield's bank account was garnished on August 20th.
At that point in time, Your Honor, my client had noticed that something was going on.
Well, no. He knew that his bank account had been garnished.
That's correct.
Well, that's something. So...
Once he knew that his bank account was being garnished...
Did it take him until October to find out that the district court had awarded York?
No, Your Honor, it did not take him quite that long. I was retained sometime shortly after the garnishment against his bank account. And we, at that point in time, communicated with counsel for the plaintiff. We tried to find out what was the basis. We told them that there was no service at all, and they ignored us. And there was a hearing set, I believe, for sometime in mid-September to substantiate the garnishment. And at that point in time, we filed an appearance and thereafter filed the motion to quash and the motion to vacate on the grounds specified in those motions. But until that point in time, my client had absolutely no idea that anything was proceeding before the federal district court. Mm-hmm. Your Honor, I have said before, and I will say it again, that the subpoena issued to a non-entity does not grant jurisdiction, and everything that goes beyond that is null and void.
But the district court found that your client was served and seemed to have sufficient evidence. What was wrong with that? You know, the neighbor and so on.
I would respectfully suggest that the district court, at the time that all of the orders were entered, up to and including filing the motion to quash, that those orders were without the presence of my client either individually or through counsel. Because, as I said, there was no knowledge on behalf of my client.
Didn't the district court find that your client was in the house when the process server was attempting to serve, and that your client and his wife were evading service?
The district court did so find, Your Honor. But on the other hand,
those are pretty tough findings for you to overcome, I would say.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Aren't those pretty tough findings for you to overcome?
Your Honor, the second return of service stated that there was a, quote, W/M, end quote, inside the house. Now, I assume that means a white male. But that this court has held is an insufficient description of who was in the house. The fact that my client's wife, from whom he's been separated for a number of years, continues to live in that house does not necessarily mean that my client was in that house.
But there are reports of people who knew your client who said he's there or he was there.
There was a report that a friend of his came to see him, called him, and found that he was at another place, that he was shopping with his wife approximately 9 miles away at a Menards store, and there is independent evidence that shopping did in fact occur by evidence of the receipt from Menards at approximately the same time that the service was alleged to have occurred. And you remember, Your Honor, up until the time that my client filed a motion to quash, the plaintiff has always alleged that it was attempting to serve a corporation. Now, it was not until we filed the motion to quash that we advised counsel that there was no such corporation, at least there was no such corporation qualified in the state of Illinois or organized in the state of Illinois. And all of the evidence shows that they were attempting to serve a corporation. And the only way that you can serve a corporation is to personally deliver documents to the alleged...
But there is no corporation. It's just Benefield.
Right.
Well, if there is no corporation, Your Honor, then there is no valid subpoena.
Counsel,
period. End of discussion.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
If I understand your brief correctly, you're saying that One Stop China is a proprietorship. Is that correct?
To the best of my knowledge at this point in time, Your Honor.
Well, a proprietorship is just a different name for the proprietor. So why can't one serve a proprietor either in his own name or the name in which he does business? This subpoena, by the way, named both, named the proprietorship and it named the proprietor. What more does one put in a subpoena?
Well, Your Honor, first of all, the subpoena did not name both. It named One Stop China LTD, period, care of Daniel Benefield. And that, to me, together with the information and belief alleged by counsel for the plaintiff that it was an Illinois corporation, indicates that plaintiff did not in any way attempt to serve Daniel Benefield in his individual capacity. And if there was a corporation...
It's too hyper-technical to be taken seriously.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
It's too hyper-technical to be taken seriously.
Well, this court has held in prior cases that a corporation...
I haven't seen a case like this.
I haven't seen a case like this either, Your Honor. This is a series of facts that are a little bit incredulous to me. But this court has previously held.
I don't think the facts are incredible. The facts are pretty obvious. The guy is high, you know, he's ducking service.
Quite straightforward.
Your Honor, I will respond to that question and then sit down as the red light has gone on. Failure to answer a door is not sufficient grounds for saying that someone is ducking service or evading service. That is a very low standard. And if this court will adhere to that, then there are a variety of situations where people who someone is seeking to serve have basically no place to run. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flank. Mr. Walton.
May it please the court. My name is David Walton. I'm here on behalf of the York Group, Inc. As time permits, I'll walk through the important portions of the record and applicable case law to show why Judge Lindbergh's judgments and orders in this case should be affirmed.
Why should they be affirmed? I thought your brief said we should dismiss the appeal for want of jurisdiction.
That's exactly right, Judge Easterbrook. Well,
that's different from affirming a judgment.
Your Honor, we stand here to say that, as you noted in your Charles opinion, that successive motions are not permitted in the circumstances. In other words, we note that this...
Successive motions, what Charles says, and Van Leyenberg, and many other cases, say that people can file as many successive motions as they want, but the successive motion, the successive post-judgment motion, does not affect the time to appeal under Appellate Rule 4A4.
Yes, Judge Easterbrook, and in these circumstances, the second post-judgment motion is grossly out of time with the entry of the judgment. And therefore, the appellate jurisdiction does not exist for review.
Well, you can appeal from the denial of the successive motion, and there's appellate jurisdiction over that appeal.
In that circumstances, it would be limited to abuse of discretion review of Judge
right,
Lindbergh's
okay,
analysis
right, yeah, right.
Of the second post-judgment motion.
Right.
And in fact, Benefield is attempting to...
So the order you don't want us to review, the order you say we don't have jurisdiction to review, is the award of attorney's fees? Or is there another...
The only order that we believe that should be reviewed is Judge Lindbergh's denial of the second post-judgment motion.
No, I understand
motion.
That, but is it... But the order you're concerned about, the order you don't want us to review, is that the award of the attorney's fees?
It would be that in addition to the contempt findings against...
Well, was the contempt finding itself an appealable order?
The contempt finding, because this is an ancillary non-party discovery proceeding, would have been appealable at the time that it was entered. Yes, Your Honor.
Even though no sanctions had been imposed?
At that point, the sanctions or the determination of the amount of fees was simply ancillary to the original judgments, which would have been entered in June of 2009. Your Honors, as was mentioned, the first post-judgment motion did not alter or amend the judgments that were entered in June of 2009, nor does appellant even present such an argument. Thus, it's not necessary to get into the substance of those particular judgments, as we've discussed. What's at issue is an abuse of discretion review in connection to the post-judgment, motion. In particular, the presentation of purported newly discovered evidence, which in fact Judge Lindbergh weighed the evidence presented during an evidentiary hearing and determined that that evidence was not newly discovered. In particular, Benefield and One Stop at that point in time contended that the judgment should be vacated or overturned because it turned out that One Stop was a trade name. Benefield was armed with this information when he first appeared in October 2009, however, failed to present any such evidence in that regard. Besides that fact, that information is not material to the circumstances, which is required under Rule 59.
What sort of service was there made of the show cause order?
The show cause order was served on Mr. Benefield. The show cause orders were served on Mr. Benefield by a process server. In addition, we provided it via email.
Personally, sir.
Personal service in the circumstances was the process server showed up at Mr. Benefield's home. They again were evading service and refusing to answer the door, and so we posted the show cause notices on the door.
Doesn't the local rule 37.1 require a personal, not just a posting, but an actual delivery to Benefield of that order?
In normal circumstances, yes, Your Honor. However, when a party is evading service, such as Mr. Benefield was doing, there is case law in which suggests that by posting it and announcing the order or judgment on the door is sufficient service. In getting back to the abuse of discretion standard on the Rule 59 motion, Judge Bauer, in his 1996 Moore opinion, clearly stated...
It just doesn't make any difference who writes opinions of this court. Not when they're written by me, not when they're written by Judge Bauer. They're opinions of the court.
Yes, Your Honor. Rule 59 does not provide a vehicle for a party to undo its own procedural failures. And this is exactly what Benefield is attempting to do here, is trying to ignore the subpoena, failing to timely appeal the judgments, and then merely presenting evidence as purported new evidence and attempt.
What's the status of the underlying suit?
The underlying suit is from the time of the appeal, the court found that Benefield had committed perjury on two different grounds.
No, I mean this. The dispute between the tractor company and...
Pending in Houston federal court?
Pardon?
Pending in Texas federal court?
Yes.
The status of that case is that we are setting up for a show cause hearing on the violations of the judgment. The court had permitted us...
So you have a judgment?
Yes, Your Honor.
We're trying to collect it. So what efforts are you making to collect it?
We have brought in the Wuxi Tractor Company, a name that they have now changed to Wuxi Metal Casket Company, in addition to a few others that we've determined have violated the judgment. We've proceeded to limited discovery, which they failed to provide us, and that's why we had to serve these non-party subpoenas.
Are you pursuing the Tractor Company and Benefield in China?
We are not pursuing them in China. The judgment was entered in Texas. We sought to enforce the judgment in state court in Texas. Wuxi Tractor appeared and removed it to federal court, and that's how we ended up in Texas federal court. Your Honors, unless you have any additional questions of me, I'd like to sit down.
Mm-hmm. There appear to be none. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.